The following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255. 458-TALK, what is on your mind about firearms today? A lovely day in Fairbanks. The sun is trying its hardest, and the temperature is 28 degrees this morning. Snow on the way, I hear, and here at the KFAR Broadcasting Station, Johan is expertly running the board for us today. So thank you, Johan. Melissa was called out on a remote assignment today, but Melissa is keeping the Shooter's Corner archives up to date, and I think they are up to date. So if you miss a program, it should be accessible in the archives within a day or so. Now, what is on our agenda today? Today, we will continue our book review and stories about W.D.M. Bell, known as Karamojo Bell, who wrote Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter in 1923. On September 21st, I put together information that would give us insight into Mr. Bell's background and his personality. On September 28th, we got right into the book, covering Chapter 1, Hunting the Bull Elephant, and Chapter 2, The Brain Shot on the Elephant. Now, Mr. Bell is known for using smaller calibers, but taking precise brain shots on elephants and dropping them instantly. And with that method, there is no stampede, as according to Bell, the herd is only mildly interested why one of their own drops instantly to its knees and does not stampede as the herd would if an elephant is wounded and runs before it succumbs. So with no stampede, the hunter can take multiple elephants quickly. And back in 1923, if you were an ivory hunter, that would be advantageous. Today, we will move into Chapter 3, The Body Shot at Elephant, and Chapter 4, African Medicine or Witchcraft and Its Bearing on the Sport. And I will also follow up on a couple listeners' comments from last week, and I have just a brief memory for history. So let's go for announcements. Last weekend, Chuck Inderreden held his inaugural Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit class in partnership with Alaska Ammo, and he posted on Facebook a picture of what looked like very happy, smiling students with their certificates. Chuck's upcoming concealed handgun permit classes are November 4 and 5 and December 9 and 10. Class times are noon to 4 p.m. on Saturday and 9 to 5 on Sunday. And Chuck's offering his defensive handgun for the armed citizen October 28 and 29 and December 16 and 17. In the next 2 weeks or so, I will talk more in depth about Chuck's defensive handgun for the armed citizen class because, as you know, I went through those scenarios. So take the Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit class to get your ACHP permit and your NICS. That's the National Instant Background Check System designation, so that there's no wait period to purchase a firearm. And that class will serve as a beginning pistol safety and operations class. And then after you've taken that class, while what you've learned on gun handling and about the laws are on your mind, turn around and sign up for Chuck's defensive handgun for the armed citizen class. And that additional more intense training plus life scenarios that are based on real life situations will provide you with confidence should you ever have to defend yourself with a gun. Now sign up for Chuck's Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit classes or any of Chuck's other classes on his website. And if you want to be on his mailing list or have any questions about Chuck's classes, call him at 844-966-4079 or go to his website, c4traininggroup.com. And also sign up for Chuck's Facebook feed and you'll get all the latest information from Chuck and his company. Glenn Miller's next NRA Metallic Cartridge Reloading class is October 14th. And oh dear, that class was full and then there was one opening and now there's two openings. Several students had to move to different dates. So if you're thinking about taking Glenn's reloading class, think about signing up for the October 14 class. The openings are now reflected on the AIMCOM website, or you can call Glenn, and Glenn would appreciate it. He is a true professional. He puts a lot of effort into that class. Glenn's other upcoming NRA metallic cartridge reloading classes, ready for registrants on the AIMCOM website, are January 6th and April 27, 2024. Now, I've mentioned before, I took Glenn's NRA metallic reloading class last fall, October 29, and look in the Shooter's Corner archives on December 8th of last year. I talked about my experiences in Glenn's class, so you can know what to expect. So sign up at the AIMCOM website or call Glenn Miller 907-347-1396 if you want to be in a future reloading class and it isn't listed on the AIMCOM website for registration. All you have to do is call Glenn. Just a couple more. The indoor winter cowboy shooting starts this Sunday, October 8th, at the TBSA range. The group is led by Jay Giesen, and it shoots the second and fourth Sundays during October and November. Starting in December, they will also shoot on the first and third Saturday, so you can go continually almost every week or just when you have time. Range opens at 1 p.m., shots downrange at 2. You can shoot both revolvers and lever or pump action rifles in .22, and they're using knockdown targets. And this is a kid-friendly sport, so the whole family can shoot together. For information, call Jay Giesen at 907-750-0043 and get on the Winter Cowboys mailing list. They have guns they can loan you and your family and your kids to get started. The TBSA Gun Show is October 14 and 15 at the TBSA building, so get that on your calendar because it's coming up quick. A couple comments here. Before I start on the wanderings of an elephant hunter, I have two related comments. First, last week a caller mentioned George Orwell's writing titled Shooting an Elephant, first published in 1936, and I'll talk about this essay in a future Shooter's Corner. I spent a few hours both reading it and reading about it, but I don't want to discuss it today because I don't have enough time to do it justice. And I will quote a paragraph from Wikipedia about the point George Orwell was making with his essay, Shooting an Elephant. Quote, "The essay describes the experience of the English narrator, possibly Orwell himself, called upon to shoot an aggressive elephant while working as a police officer in Burma. Because the locals expect him to do the job, he does so against his better judgment. His anguish increased by the elephant's slow and painful death. The story is regarded as a metaphor for colonialism as a whole and for Orwell's view that when the white man turns tyrant, it is his own freedom that he destroys," unquote. So I have that on my very long list of Shooter's Corner topics for the future. And second, we talked about Bell deciding to use the smaller caliber, the .275, after his experiments between that and his .400 double for hunting elephants. And a caller asked, if perhaps a gun such as an AK-47 with a smaller caliber but with proper placement and the additional firepower would be an alternative to larger calibers. With more firepower, you would perhaps have a better chance of hitting the central nervous system. He mentioned perhaps as in Alaska with defense against a charging bear. Well, the evening of last week's program, I was catching up on my reading, AfricaHunting.com, and someone started a thread asking what the ideal jungle rifle would be. And one gentleman responded that he had taken half a dozen deep jungle trips in the CAR, which is the Central African Republic, and Cameroon over the decades, and he took his old 416 Rigby. The point of my mentioning this is he said he was ambushed by a forest elephant while hunting sitatanga in the forest. And a sitatanga is an antelope and it lives mostly in the swamps in Central Africa. It's kind of brown with stripes. Well, forest elephants are smaller than the typical savanna elephant in Africa that we normally think of. Their heads and their ears and their trunks are shaped differently. And the posters succeeded in killing the charging forest elephant. But upon examination, they discovered AK-47 bullets in its body, so no wonder it was a grouchy elephant. The point was that the poachers wounding the forest elephant with the AK-47 did not follow up, and their shots obviously didn't kill it. He didn't say where on the carcass they found the bullet, so I don't know if the poachers stalked that forest elephant and had time to take aim shots, or if the elephant charged them and they just shot in panic and just sprayed bullets. So as we will learn from Bell later this hour in his chapter on the body shot, it is unlikely for an elephant that a shot will break the spine, which would also immediately drop the animal, so that's not going to happen. And since a headshot has to be specifically placed, you would still have to aim that AK-47 very carefully, and so I'm not sure more firepower is going to help. For bears, I have never been charged, but I am going to stick with commonly proven calibers. Now, I looked at a National Geographic article titled 100,000 Elephants Killed by Poachers in Just 3 Years, Landmark Analysis Finds. It's published August 18, 2014. 100,000 elephants poached from 2010 through 2012 in Central, Eastern, and Southern Africa. And the caption on the photograph of dead elephants at the top of that article reads, quote, "One of the largest mass elephant slaughters in decades. It took place in," and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, "Boyuba in Djedda National Park, Cameroon, in 2012. Armed with grenades and AK-47s, poachers killed more than 300, end quote, 300 elephants. So I expect one can kill an elephant with an AK-47, but just know they're not legal to hunt with for any game in any country in Africa, as far as I know, and neither, of course, are grenades. And so those were in reference to the two comments from last week. Let's see, how much time do we have? We got to go break? Should we go to?
Yeah.
Okay.
You set the rules.
Yeah, okay. I set the rules. All right, let's go to break. Okay. Yeah.
Ride into winter with a friend, your Snowway Snowplow. Snowway plows are stronger, smarter, the most reliable plow in the industry. Their wireless controls eliminate messy dash installations and provide the ultimate in-cab flexibility. Better yet, Snowway's patented down-pressure hydraulics increase your plowing efficiency by 30%. The drive-in mount system hooks up in seconds, and their structural plow warranty is the best in the business. Stop by Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer on Dale Road near the airport, or call 479-6665.
Who turned out the lights? Never get stuck in the dark with Auto Trim Design Moose Lights and backup lights on your vehicle. They're the best in the interior. See Auto Trim Design's wide variety of Vision X, Putco, and VLED lights that fit most vehicles. Stop in or give us a call, 456-8400, and we'll design the right setup that fits your lifestyle. Auto Trim Design's philosophy hasn't changed in over 20 years. We treat every customer the Alaskan way, with honesty, integrity, and respect.
KFAR weather.
Chance of snow today. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. High of 39, winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tonight, snow likely, lows around 28. Overcast again tomorrow, a mixture of precipitation likely, daytime highs approaching 36. 2 to 4 inches of snow tonight through tomorrow night. And that's your weather on KFAR, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio, and Johan and the controls. Please call in at 458-8255, 458-TALK, and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. And I just found out that I'm in control of the program. I didn't know that. So I'm going to have a long list of requests for next week. No, Melissa keeps me in check. I don't get to control too much around here. Okay, I wanted to just make a comment about history here. I'd like to get back to my history story soon. It just hasn't worked out time-wise on the program. But Bell's book is about history. I wanted to bring to our attention that on this day, October 5th, but in 1943, World War II, Americans made a successful air raid on Wake Island. And the result of that action prompted a Japanese rear admiral to order that all their remaining captured Americans be executed 2 days later on October 7th, 1943. And those remaining Americans were construction workers and contractors and one doctor, and there were 98 of them. They were blindfolded and machine-gunned. One prisoner did escape. He managed to carve a message on a large coral rock near where Americans were hastily buried. It read 98 USPW 51043. Unfortunately, he was recaptured and beheaded, and that rock is now a memorial. And there's another memorial listing all 98 Americans by name, and I found a list online with the names and hometowns of all of these men. And I have a note to myself to talk about Wake Island on a future program, what happened there during World War II, and specifically the Wake Island Massacre, so that we do not forget. Okay. Now, let's move on. I will continue our discussion of WDM, or Walter Dalrymple Maitland Bell, also known as Karamojo Bell, his book, The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter. So originally written in 1923, please keep in mind the sensibilities of that time, and I mentioned last week, Karamojo Bell hunted in Africa well before 1923. And I'm not going to change his terms into politically correct language for 2023. I will just quote as he wrote. So still in Chapter 2, The Body Shot, I closed last week's program with this quote. So I'm going to repeat this quote to set the stage for going forward. The experienced elephant shot can reach the brain from almost any angle and with the head in almost any position. But the novice will be well advised to try the broadside shot only. Having mastered this and steadied the frontal shot, he may then try it. When successful with the above two shots, he may be able to reach the zenith of the elephant hunter's ambition, i.e. to kill instantaneously any of these huge pachyderms with one tiny nickel pencil-like bullet when moving or stationary from any angle, unquote. And now I'm into new material to finish up the last of Chapter 2. Mr. Bell then tells us that from the hunter's view, if the hunter's brain shot is not right on and it is ineffective on the elephant, that miss does not create an enraging effect that a body shot into the vitals, which shots don't immediately kill, have. If the hunter's brain shot misses the brain but passes close to it, the effect is to stun the elephant. And Bell says the stunned elephant will drop and appear dead. Quote, if no convulsive jerking of the limbs is noticed, he is only stunned and should be given another shot, as otherwise he will soon get up and make off as if nothing had touched him, unquote. And that was a quote I didn't get to last week, but reminded me of Ron's call about something humorous he had read with the .458 Winchester and the .460 Weatherby. And Ron said the gist of it was, if you hit the elephant with the .458 Winchester, nothing happens. If you hit the animal with the .460 Weatherby, it would stun the animal long enough to chamber another round. And that must have been a fun read. Both of those calibers were for thick-skinned, dangerous game. So now we move on into Chapter 3, The Body Shot at Elephant. And then we'll move into Chapter 4, African Medicine or Witchcraft and its Bearing on Sport. So Bell had explained in Chapter 2 that the brain shot is speedy and more humane than a body shot, especially if the body shot is not as perfect as it should have been. But Bell says that body shots are not all that negative, and he realizes many hunters only use body shots. He says the body shot preference is usually by hunters who prefer using big bores. That's the big double rifles. It works because the elephant's heart and lungs, along with adjacent arteries, provide a large area target for a hunter who can perform a correct shot with a double rifle. And if the shot is off, the elephant, of course, will either flee or charge, neither of which is good. I saw for myself in Zimbabwe when I was there, along the Zambezi River, what is known as the tall grass. And the tall grass is taller than I am, and I'm 5 feet, 2 inches. And as we boated by, I wondered how many lions were peering out at us without my being able to see them. I never saw one, but we heard them roar at night, or how many snakes were slithering through the tall grass unseen. But many elephants were out in the open. But several times I did see just gray tops of heads moving silently along a little bit back from the shore, and they were moving through the tall grass. That's all I could see, was just the tops of their heads. And Bell tells us, should that body shot cause the elephant to charge instead of flee? Quote, the novice will have a very unpleasant time indeed. An angry bull elephant is a magnificent sight, but an extremely difficult animal to deal with, even for the practice shot. For one thing, he is generally end on and the head is at a high angle and never still. If the novice comes through the encounter undamaged, he will either leave elephants severely alone for the rest of his life, or he will be extremely careful where he puts his bullet next time. Now, Bell explains it is the natural inclination of most hunters to fire quickly, straight at the elephant, anywhere. And he says, quote, this must be resisted at all costs. If you can force yourself to wait until you have counted to 10 slowly, the animal is yours, unquote. Now, Bell explains using our brains give us the power of judgment and confidence. And if we do that, we will stay cool and wait for our best chances instead of shooting quickly and inaccurately. When I used to teach bear class, I'll spare you the details for time's sake, but we would surprise the student by reeling in the bear target when the student did not expect it. And the student would have to react quickly to the charging paper bear and take headshots in the kill zone. And students had to take the class year after year if they were to work in the field. So return students knew how to take accurate shots. They knew what we were going to do. But any students new to that year would panic and shoot as many rounds as they could as the paper bearer closed in on them, and none of those shots would be accurate. The poor paper bearers would have shots whizzing past their ears or end up with pierced ears or have shots missing any critical organs. And when students saw the results of their panic shooting, we'd explain to calm down, aim carefully in the kill zone for a brain shot, and take their time. And take one or two accurate brain shots, and the bear, if in real life, will likely fall. And this is also what Joe Nava would say. He would say you can take a warning shot if you have time, but after that, you have one, maybe two at the most, shots to put that bear down before he gets to you. And I would think a hunter new to elephant in those days, without the counseling of a professional hunter or backup of a professional hunter, might panic too. And this is exactly what Bell is saying. Quote, when you are in this state of mind, try and get to a range of about 30 yards at right angles to the fore and aft line of the animal. Now see if the foreleg is clearly visible for the greater part. If it is, and it is fairly upright, you may use its center line as your direction. A third of the distance from the brisket to the top of the back is the elevation. If struck there or thereabouts, either the top of the heart or the lungs or some of the arteries will be pierced, and the animal cannot live even when the bullet used is as small as a 56. He may run 15 or 20 yards, subside into a walk for another 40 or 50 yards, stand about for some time, and then subside. This is a pierced artery. He may rush for 30 to 60 yards at great pace and fall on his stride. That is a heart shot. Or he may rush off, spouting bright red blood from his trunk in great quantities. This is a shot in the lungs, unquote. And Bell goes on to explain that if you miss the deadly areas, the shot may hit the spinal column, but a large elephant's spine is massive, and Bell says it is rarely broken. If the hunter hits the spine and it isn't broken, the elephant will soon be back up in his feet and run off. If the shot is too far forward, then the shot might hit the elephant's shoulder. The bone would then be weakened, and if the elephant flees, the bone might break. But an elephant cannot trot or gallop. He can pace. If an elephant is broken, if a leg is broken on that elephant, he is anchored. Although he could stagger for a few yards, he can actually use his tusks as support, like a crutch to support his broken leg. And if this is the case, then the hunter could quickly dispatch him. Bell continues, and I will quote, "If your bullet has gone too far back and got into the stomach, you may be in for a lively time, as nothing seems to anger them more than a shot so placed. If he comes for you, meaning business, no instructions would help you simply because you wouldn't have time to think of them. Hit him hard and quickly and as often as you can, about a line between the eyes or in the throat when his head is up, and see what happens. Never turn your back to him. While you can see him, you know where he is. And besides, you cannot run in thick stuff without falling. Always stand still and shoot whichever animal threatens you the most is what I have found to be the best plan," unquote. So Bell goes on to explain that if the elephant has his head back, quote, "you may kill him with a shot where the windpipe finally enters the chest as indicated by the spear." Breaking the quote for a second, my book doesn't have the illustrations, and so there's nothing to indicate where the spear he's talking about is pointing. So back to the quote. "For some reason or other, this is not an easy shot. It may be because the spot is nearly always in deep shadow. Personally, I would wait until he lowered his head and gave me a chance for his brain." This is continuing the quote. "A hunting companion of mine once shot an elephant in the brain. The bullet had entered through the top of the palate, showing that he must have been almost under the animal's head when he fired," unquote. So continuing, let's see here. Am I waiting for, or you're going to tell me when we're going to break this? Yes. Okay, I'm waiting. Okay,
yeah. About 1 minute.
1 minute. Okay, I have 1 minute. Continuing with the, ever since the clock fell off the wall, I really need to buy us another clock. I've never figured the time thing out. Okay. We're going to have fun here. Okay, stop it. Continue with the chapter on the body shot. Bell says an elephant in short grassy plains is in the best position for the body shot. And he mentions the elephants being in a family of three. A mature bull would, of course, be your first choice. A massive head and short, heavy tusks. And if you didn't already know, those tusks are teeth. Those are the elephant's teeth. Bell says to leave the smallest elephant alone because it should be spared. It's the young one, and its teeth would scarcely weigh 30 pounds. So
okay,
let it mature. We're good. We're going to our half-hour break. Okay.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken, he went down south. Here he is speaking from Mexico City.
"So much of what we want to deliver for our people depends on providing a foundation of safety and security."
And the Biden administration will now allow border wall construction to resume for about a 20-mile stretch in Texas. More than 75,000 Kaiser Permanente healthcare workers across the country back on the picket lines, day two of a labor strike. One striking worker in Los Angeles talking about what they're asking for here.
"We just want a fair bargaining from our bosses. And once we accomplish that and we're not understaffed, we're going to do the best we can, as we have continued to do every day, for our members."
The company says the strike did not impact hospitals. 60% of employees still at work. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
In some fun news, in a state known for its quirky and unique competitions, the National Park Service is bringing back a fastly burgeoning contest. Fat Bear Week returned Wednesday as a fun way for Alaskans or anyone else around the world to vote on which bear in Katmai National Park they think is the burliest. The bracket features 12 bears in total that are seeded. The top four receive a bye in the first round and pits the bears against each other in a single elimination format. The contest runs through next Tuesday, October 10th, when the biggest Bruin will be crowned. Katmai brown bears come out of hibernation in the spring and spend all summer gorging themselves on plentiful salmon at and around the Brooks Falls. The Park Service cameras that are installed around the falls give the public a rare look at the bears in their natural habitat and can be viewed on the explore.org website. Bear 747, the winner in two of the last 3 years, has been estimated to weigh upwards of 1,400 pounds. Last year's contest received more than 1 million total votes.
Online at KFAR660.com.
Alaska is new every season. Fall and winter bring new sporting opportunities for grouse, ptarmigan, and other small game hunting, predator calling and trapping, snowshoeing, and winter camping. Gear up for success at Frontier Outfitters for traps, snares, and calls, guns, and ammunition. You'll stay warm and dry with the right clothing and rest easy with tents, sleeping bags, and camp necessities. Just downstairs, you'll find ATV and snow machine accessories and Sentry Hardware. For every season, there's Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Ben here at Auto Trim Design. Summer is moving down the road, and that means it's time to start getting ready for winter. At Auto Trim Design, we have something for everyone. Get your remote start with drone mobile, moose lights, heated seats, seat covers, tonneau covers, toppers, WeatherTech floor liners, and more before the snow flies. Auto Trim Design is your one-stop shop for all your vehicle accessory needs, located at 2550 South Cushman Street under the huge American flag. Stop in or give us a call at 456-8400.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio, and Johan on the controls giving me power. Please call in at 458-8255, 458-TALK, and let us know what's on your mind about firearms, elephants, or anything else related today. And I think we have a caller on the line. Are you there, caller? Uh-oh, do we lose our caller? No? Well, if we had a caller and you didn't want to sit through all the commercials, then call back and we'll take the call. Okay, I'm going to start out with a quote here, and this is from Bill, and this is kind of interesting. Aim your rifle with one eye closed when you target an elephant's brain. Everything below the head is obliterated with this form of backsight. This makes it much more difficult to judge correctly the position of the brain as the sight cuts out one or both of the leading marks, i.e. the eye and the ear hole. The shaded portion represents the hands holding the rifle, and I'm going to talk about that in a second, but we have our caller back. So, caller, you are on the line. Hi, wait, talk, can you, okay, all right, we got the volume up, okay.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to say, Laura, I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I remember reading Bell's book, 55 years ago when I was in my teens.
Oh.
But what I'm curious about right now is, does he ever mention what type of bullet he uses, whether they're solids, soft points, so forth, because my family, we've had experience using, say, like 150 grain soft point bullets in 300 Magnum,
uh-huh.
And literally having them explode on the hide of a big moose. And so we pretty much shifted to just using solid bullets. And I'm just curious about what Bell may have used.
Yeah, I would need to do a little more looking. I haven't come across that yet, and I actually have quite a few books, but I'm not knowledgeable and have no personal experience on this. But what in my research for what I needed for myself and going back and reading quite a few years of discussions about bullets for different type of game, dangerous game, and moose aren't, well, they kind of fit into this. Most of them are using soft points and then the solids when they need to go through bone, like skulls. And so I know for myself, I bought the 375 soft points, and I bought a number of solids, the Woodley solids, just in case. But also in my reading of PHs giving their opinion, some PH, if you're not, if you, I guess if you don't know what you're doing, so I would be a first-time hunter there, and I would fall under the class of I don't know what I'm doing, I need to be told probably, that it's better to just have the soft points because they'll get their solids and their soft points mixed up and take the wrong shot. But I don't know what to tell you. I don't have that personal experience, but let me do a little bit of looking. I've got a little note here to look, and I'll see. He's got several other books besides just this one, and this is the only one I have. So it's quite possible later in his later work that he mentioned this. I have to think that back then that was, you know, they didn't have soft points. They just had lead.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, it's been my experience. My one son has taken over 20 moose.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gone pretty much to a 45-70 with solids. And what's amazing is how little meat damage there really is.
Right.
And the fact that 45-70, most times he doesn't even recover the bullet. It goes clean through the animal, whether it's in the shoulders. Generally, he makes a good either heart or lung shot.
Yeah.
But it's just impressive to me, after having butchered a number of moose shot with expanding bullets, soft points, how much meat damage there is in comparison to using just a solid bullet.
Yep. Yep, that's certainly a factor. Let me do a little looking. I might not get it done by next week, but I've got a note to do it, and it will be interesting. I also have all of Cal Pappas's books. That was the gentleman that passed away last year that was leading the group I was going with to Africa. I have all of his books on the doubles, and he was recognized as an expert on the bullet formation, casting the bullets and the loads and all of that. And let me see if I can find anything in his books on that also. But I think our best bet is letting people call in that have personal experience and give their opinions.
Sure. Well, once again, I really appreciate this show. I enjoy it.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate you telling me that, because sometimes I think this room is covered with the foam that's like inside of a rifle case or a gun case. It's kind of like that little textured foam, and I think like I'm just in this big room with one person, and I have no idea who's listening. So thank you for telling me that.
I've got one satisfied listener here.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, let's see here. Since I'm in charge of the time now, I have 5 minutes. Johan's laughing. Okay. See, Melissa runs a really tight house. Like, I follow the rules. Yeah, I love this. Okay, I have freedom. So, unfortunately, I had just talked about you're taking the shot. What happens when you close one eye? And there's a diagram of what this looks like from the shooter's point of view. If you close one eye, what that's going to look like, you're going to obliterate your view of the head, so you're not going to see the eyes and the ear holes. And that diagram is not in my book. But we could see if the library, if you're going to get this book, check and see if the library can get an older copy of it, or maybe there's an original printing. But if you Google, this is what I did, if you Google W.D.M. Bell Drawings, The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter, you'll get a link to the AfricaHunting.com website. And AfricaHunting.com. And that link will be to ElephantHunting.220/page3. Well, it'll just come up. It'll say Africa Hunting. And the exact drawing Bell is talking about is posted of this view with one eye closed. It's posted in that thread, and there's other drawings from his book there also. And one photograph in that thread on AfricaHunting.com is of a native holding an elephant heart, and that heart is about the size of the top of my head to my waist, and I'm 5'2", and that really puts things in perspective for you. And also, that search on Google will provide a link to the Christie's auction website where you can see some of the drawings, but not nearly as clearly as the ones posted on AfricaHunting.com. And there may be other search arguments that will bring up some of the drawings in Bell's book. The AfricaHunting.com website is what I follow. You do not need to join to read posts or to do searches to find information. So back to Mr. Bell. Quote, "Here is what happened when the same sight is being taken at the same elephant with both eyes open. Owing to the left eye seeing the whole image, its view of it is not obstructed by the hands, the whole of the elephant head appears visible through the hands and rifle. The advantage is obvious. Anyone who can do it will take the trouble to practice," unquote. And of course, when we teach rifle, we always try to get people and pistol to keep both eyes open if they can do that. And to end this chapter on the body shot, Bell warns the hunter going out for his first elephant. He cautions, quote, to beware that the native gun bearer does not rush him into firing too soon. They have not our medical knowledge, which teaches that the brain, heart, and lungs are the best places to hit. They would hit them anywhere and trust to medicine to do the rest. And I have been solemnly assured by native elephant hunters that it is not the bullet which causes the animal's death, but the fire from the powder which enters the hole made by the bullet, end quote. So think about that. Okay. Now, we have finished chapter 3 on the body shot, with Bell advising us in the last couple of sentences that the native elephant hunters, as likely did all natives during that era, attribute all things to muti, and muti is medicine. My friend carried a muti box when we were driving from place to place in Zimbabwe, and that's a whole other story. Okay. So appropriately, the next chapter, chapter 4, is titled African Medicine or Witchcraft and Its Bearing on the Sport. And now we get into the culture of the times. And again, remember, this book was written in 1923, and Bell's experiences were from the 20, 25 years before that. Native tribal beliefs are to this day strong. Tribal members still have their muti, what they call medicine, and many adopt farming, hunting, healthcare techniques that they learn from Westerners, our modern techniques, but in the back of their minds, they double up and they still believe in and use their muti. So, quote, the ruling factor in the pagan African's life is witchcraft, generally called throughout the continent medicine. All his doings are ruled by it. No venture can be undertaken without it. Should he be going into the bush on some trivial project, he will pick up a stone and deposit it on what has, through the years, become a huge pile. This is to propitiate, gain favor of some spirit. But this apparently does not ensure the success of the expedition, for should a certain species of bird call on the wrong side of the road, the whole affair is off and he returns to his village to wait another day when the omens are good, unquote. And here's another quote. In illness, he recognizes no natural laws. All is ascribed to medicine on the part of some enemy. Should his wife fail to produce the yearly baby, someone is making medicine against him through her. Hunting or raiding ventures are never launched without weeks of medicine making. The regular practitioners of this medicine are called medicine men or witch doctors. Their power is enormous and is hardly fully realized even by the European administration. Although several African penal codes now contain legislative efforts to curtail the practice of the evil eye and the black arts, unquote. Oh, this might be a good time to go to our, okay. This is fun, controlling the brakes.
Okay. Out in Arizona where the bad men are, the only thing to guide you is an evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far was Ragtime Cowboy Joe.
Ride into winter with a friend, your Snowway Snowplow. Snowway plows are stronger, smarter, the most reliable plow in the industry. Their wireless controls eliminate messy dash installations and provide the ultimate in-cab flexibility. Better yet, Snowway's patented down-pressure hydraulics increase your plowing efficiency by 30%. The drive-in mount system hooks up in seconds, and their structural plow warranty is the best in the business. Stop by Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer on Dale Road near the airport, or call 479-6665.
Who turned out the lights? Never get stuck in the dark with Auto Trim Design Moose Lights and backup lights on your vehicle. They're the best in the interior. See Auto Trim Design's wide variety of Vision X, Putco, and VLED lights that fit most vehicles. Stop in or give us a call, 456-8400, and we'll design the right setup that fits your lifestyle. Auto Trim Design's philosophy hasn't changed in over 20 years. We treat every customer the Alaskan way, with honesty, integrity, and respect.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR weather.
Overcast today with a chance for snow. Highs level off around 39. Northeasterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Snow likely again tonight, 28, cloudy. Mixed precipitation likely again tomorrow, 36. 2 to 4 inches of snow tonight through tomorrow night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio, and Johan on the controls. Please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK if you have any comments or questions on anything we've been talking about, anything about firearms at all. And I left off talking about the evil eye and the black arts and medicine and muti and witch doctors. And that sets the stage for the culture Bell operated in while he was hunting in Africa. And he comments that these medicine men seem to be shrewd and cunning individuals, but men who actually, they honestly believed in their powers. Shrewd and cunning because they were held in high esteem by their tribe, and they wanted to continue to receive that status. Tribal members gave them food and gifts. And Bell says, quote, "Gifts of food are showered upon them. I suspect they secretly eat the fowls and goats which are brought as sacrifices to propitiate the spirits. At any rate, these seem to disappear in a mysterious manner. Beer and women are theirs for the asking as long as all goes well." But if the medicine man's predictions or ability to help his people fail, he had better be on guard or he will face trouble. And Bell notes the biggest downfall these men face is predicting rain. And so Bell devotes several paragraphs to how a cunning medicine man might continue to get gifts from the tribe while really he's just postponing things and waiting for Mother Nature to eventually rain. But if rain doesn't come and crops die, Bell says he's going to have to flee or he could be stoned or clubbed to death. It's important to consider the beliefs of the natives Bell had to work with and rely on for their information, the porters, the trackers, and much more. Bell must truly have had a great capacity to work with a foreign culture and not be killed by natives as many hunters before and after him were. He did not impose his own beliefs on the natives, and this is partially what I think made him successful as a hunter in Africa. Here's another quote. "To the elephant hunter, the medicine man can sometimes be of great assistance. I once consulted a medicine man about a plague of honey guides. These are African birds about the size of a yellowhammer, which have the extraordinary habit of locating wild bees' nests and leading man to them. By fluttering along in front of him, at the same time keeping up a continuous and penetrating twittering until a particular tree in which the nest is situated is reached. After the native has robbed the nest of its honey by aid of smoke and fire, he throws on the ground a portion, sometimes very small, of the grub-filled comb as a reward for the birds," unquote. And the experience Bell is going to recount in this chapter with the honey guides and native tribal medicine came about just after the big bushfires. And after those big bushfires, elephants are easier to track because the hunter can easily see their spoor on the ground. It's gray against the blackened earth. And Bell tells us that hundreds of natives roam the bush after the fires as the honey guides are at their busiest. Natives are searching for honey, hundreds of them. And Bell said that he had been tracking elephant for 16 days, but when he approaches them, he would either hear or see them stampede. And what was happening is that the honey guide birds, doing what they naturally do, were inadvertently alerting the elephants of an enemy presence because hundreds of natives were searching for honey. And I say inadvertently because that may not be true. It's all part of nature. And I have read hunt stories where hunters were frustrated because zebras and monkeys acted as security guards, so to speak, for the buffalo they were hunting. Just like the monkeys that stole my peanuts or groundnuts, they made such a racket that an elephant probably understood monkey and quickly came over to steal my crossbody pack. Or we see ravens circling in the bush and as a sign there's a dead animal or a bear kill, and we stay away. We have a caller here, so let me take this call and then we'll continue. Caller, you're on the line.
Hello, this is Randy.
Hi, Randy.
I was just curious, have you ever had any physical contact with an elephant, you know, like maybe a domesticated elephant or something?
No. I just recently saw a video of some kids eating an ice cream cone at a zoo, and the elephant stuck his trunk out and took their ice cream cone. Very gently. Have you ever?
Yes, I have.
Oh.
My first thing was in the 60s at the Griffith Park Zoo,
uh-huh.
and that's when they let people at that time feed elephants.
Oh.
You just have a peanut, and it, and the elephant would stick its trunk over the moat, a big
uh-huh.
panel, and I don't know if he'd actually touch the thing, but he'd suck it up, you know, real quick.
Yeah.
The second incident was when I lived in Thailand. I rode an elephant and did that. Those are Indian elephants.
Yeah.
And then my most memorable contact with an elephant was right here in Fairbanks at the Bentley Mall in the parking lot. I've got it written in my diary somewhere.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what year this was. It was some time ago. But they had a juvenile elephant, not a little baby, but a midway elephant, and it was giving rides to people out in the parking lot. I think it was in a tent, and there was a fence, you know, a circular track.
Uh-huh.
The elephant would go round and round and was giving someone a ride. I guess it might have been being led by somebody, too. But I was on the outside of the fence, of the iron fence, watching this, and every time that elephant would come by me without breaking a stride, his trunk would latch on to cover my whole face, and he would keep on walking, and as he walked far enough, he'd have to let go, and he kept doing that about, I just stood there, I didn't move, and he kept doing it every time, at least three or four times as he walked around the track, he'd grab my face with his trunk.
How amazing. You weren't scared, or...
No, I thought it was kind of charming, you know. Just a juvenile elephant. But,
yeah, it's so cute.
But he enjoyed doing that, and I kind of thought it was fun, too.
But he liked you, apparently.
Yeah, I guess so.
It was an elephant kiss or something, I don't know. You know, I watched them at Tiger Safari, so I spent a lot of time watching them, and they're like little vacuum cleaners. They're just, they cover every inch of ground, and then 10 minutes later, they go back over the same ground again. I think there were little pods falling off the trees about that time of year. It was I guess the end of winter, so whatever was left on the trees was falling up, and they were they're very agile. The ends of their trunks are very agile.
Yeah.
And well, that's really interesting. Do you know how long ago that was?
When the elephant
was here.
What are you talking about?
And when the elephant was in Fairbanks, do you know how long ago?
I'll have to go through all my diaries because I think I drew a picture of that incident.
Oh, wonderful.
To help spot it, you know, but I can't go through all the diaries. I can't remember when it was. It was probably more than 20 years ago. It was a while.
Yeah, because I've been up here I've been up here a while since the 80, and I don't remember an elephant being here, but maybe I just missed it.
If I find out, I'll let you know when it was.
Okay, yeah, do. Maybe I can go back to the News Miner or something and find a picture or something. That's a great story. Thank you for sharing that. I would love to be touched by an elephant.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we have another caller. Okay, caller, you're on the line. Are you there? Uh-oh, do we lose him? We lost.
Nope.
Oh, you're there. You're there. Okay.
Hey, this is Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, I was just reading an article from Outdoor Life of a grizzly bear attack in Canada at Banff National Park. However you say that.
I read that. Yeah, that was just recently, right?
Yeah, it was like the Friday, September 29th. That a couple and their dog were
free. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was just reading that, and I heard you say, talking about in the past teaching a bear safety class, and I thought, wow, these and apparently this couple was familiar with bear safety, but
that's interesting. The last bear safety classes we taught, that very last class, it was that summer when a group was came in face to face with a bear, and these are the geologists, and they have a protocol, so they called in a helicopter, and if the bear was charging them right then and there, they would shoot it, but the bear was stalking them, and so they called in the helicopter, and I guess the helicopter tried several times to get the bear out of there, and eventually they had to shoot the bear. One of our students had to shoot the bear, but it's very difficult. The students that live in Alaska, they understand this. The students that would come outside on grants to do research up here, I really don't think we got through to them how serious this is and how they needed to take the shooting seriously. And we would liken it to self-defense, the physiological changes that are going to happen to you, how you're going to react. You're not going to know ahead of time how you're going to react. But you have to take all those things into account. And then if we related it to anything that had to do with self-defense, they would get some of them would get upset with us because they didn't even want to use guns in the first place. They were being forced into this because these are the rules if they're going to go out into the bush. So I read that article. I feel bad for those people. I, you know, we'll probably never know exactly what happened, but it's a sad situation. Thank you for reminding everybody about that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thank you for the show. I always enjoy it.
Okay. Thank you. So let's see. If I'm in charge here, can I have another 15 minutes? I only get 1 minute. Okay. We're going to pick up the story about the honey guides next week. And I want to remind everyone, while we're talking about guns and since we had Joe's music playing earlier, the three safety rules, the NRA safety rules, to always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction, always keep your finger off the trigger until ready to shoot, and always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use. And I always ask students, what does ready to use mean? If you're hunting and you're done hunting and you're putting your firearms back in your car, what do? You unload them, you're done using them. If you're in town and you're carrying one in the chamber because you're carrying for personal protection and you go home, are you done using your gun or are you using that gun for personal protection? What do you do with that gun when you get home? Who else is in your house? How is that gun being kept safe and available for you? So thank you, everyone. Thank you, callers. And we will talk more about the elephants next week.
This has been Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.